out of the 100 people, I would say at least 60 of them have their phones out, you know, just filming, because they're just like, wow, I have never seen anything like this in my entire life, and I have to share it with the world. That's what you want. We want people to want to share it with the world.
Are you still in Miami? And if so, like, the team that you're working with, you mentioned, you know, people that you were talking with and discussing even the last episode with, are those people physically in your world, or are they remote? What does that look like with the people that you surround yourself with?
So out of the core team, it's about 9 people. I would say about 4, so about half of them live in Florida, and then the other half are scattered between just random places, all in the US. So we've met everybody on the team. I've known for at least, I would say, 10-12 years. So they're all
whoa.
So
that's amazing.
Being remote, or like not knowing who you're working with, is kind of like, I already know them. It's like, all right, you know, we won't see each other for 5 years, and I see him, I'm like, oh, let's, you know, it's like we never even left. So which is an awesome thing. I got very, very lucky to be able to work with a bunch of friends. But yeah, so we have like 9 core team members, and then about 45 devs stationed. 25 are in about California, and another one are in about like India area.
45?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they all specialize in different things. And yeah, it's been... they obviously have a lot of they have a lot of other things going on as well. Like we're not at the point to where we're able to have everybody full time, and you know, the whole thing. It's just not necessary right now. But yeah, huge.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's quite a team. And so that's a lot bigger than some of the random projects, which just have like the one person or whatever.
That's awesome.
With going to the central idea of the Boomin. So proof of sound is where a creator attaches some piece of media to an existing audio, and the listener listens to that audio, verifies it with proof of sound, which then mints the NFT of the media. Did I get anything wrong there? That's the basic concept of proof of sound, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's the two sides. There's the creator side, and then there's the listener side. And so the creator takes a piece of original audio, because you know, we don't want to get into the whole IP issue, but basically they take the original audio, and then they can upload a piece of media to that audio file, and then when their audience then verifies that they're listening to that, they verify the proof of sound, which then triggers the smart contract to mint the media that was attached to that audio fingerprint, in a very basic explanation.
Interesting. And I guess that's good. Them listening can be in the form of listening on a streaming service, or listening at a concert, or hearing it on the radio. Is that right? Any of those forms?
Yeah. So the beta is going to be for streaming services and podcasts and YouTube videos and, you know, more pre-recorded things. And then the live version the live version works well, but there's definitely needing some research and development to really hone in the algorithm a little bit. But yeah, that's definitely where we're going to be headed for sure.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's great. And and something that Boomin really prides itself on is the Web3 nature of the product. And the website says that it's really important to prevent the centralization of audio information. So can you explain why that's a really important issue to you guys?
Yes. So I would just like to preface that even people who have their entire lives and profession in the music industry usually don't even understand this part of it. It gets very, very complicated, and there's a lot of ins and outs. I saw a diagram once of somebody trying to like explain it, and it literally looks like you're trying to calculate, you know, how to fly to the moon. It looks really crazy. So a lot of people don't understand how many different layers there are to the music industry, and I'll try and separate them without going into very, a lot of complexities. But when it comes down to the music industry, and I also, so when it comes down to the music industry, there's a bunch of different sides. So you have like the obviously the artist side, and then you have the managerial and admin side, and then there's the, then you have publishing sides, and then you have performing rights organizations, and then you have different societies for international royalties, and then you have label. Like, there's so many moving parts to it. And when it comes down to it, basically, is that when BMI, so BMI is a performing rights organization that we have here in the States. And so they're the ones that basically pay out royalties to artists. And when something is played internationally, they are not the ones to do that. There is another society that you can go to called the Harry Fox Agency. I think it was actually just bought out by Nielsen, like the SoundScan people. Nielsen just bought it. But and then they're the ones that collect the royalties in different countries and then report back to you. So in order for them to be able to take and match those royalties with the metadata that they have in their database and the metadata that is in the other countries, everything needs to match. And so there needs to be a sort of transparency for that transaction and that exchange to happen without any issues. And that is not the case. There, it's literally the exact opposite. There is zero transparency. And so you're basically just taking the word from somebody else, which that's why blockchain is so important. I think, especially in the music industry, is because you're not trusting that one person to collect and handle all of this information for you. It's already encoded in the smart contract. And so the big problem, we'll give an example of what's called the black box royalties. And so if there's something in your metadata that you've submitted and your pub admin can't collect the royalties for you. So what means is that, let's say you had a song with Drake. There's some information that doesn't match up. There's a number missing. There's a space somewhere. Also, might I add that the language and the way that the databases are organized for these performing rights organizations is extremely outdated, and they will not change. So we're talking about very slow, lethargic, one small space in between a code can just mess up the entire thing. So like, even though you submit all your information, things can get lost or things can get misplaced or misspelt, so you won't receive these royalties. So even though you do everything and your management handles everything exactly how it's supposed to be, you can still lose your royalties and you won't even know. So they say you've generated $10 million in royalties. That's a lot of money. Let's say $10 million in royalties. That's what they say. But really, you have $25 million in royalties, but there's only the other 15 million haven't been verified, right? Yeah. Verified to distribute them back to you. And so when there's missing information and those royalties cannot be distributed back to you, they're held in a black box. So there was a law that was passed called the Music Modernization Act back in 2019, which basically removed the legal obligations for labels to claim royalties that were unclaimed. So if there was royalties that have been sitting and no one's claimed them, Sony's like, what are you doing with those royalties over there? Like, hey, can you get? And they're like, no. The law basically says that because you don't own the IP that generated those royalties, they're not for you and you can't touch them. So everybody thought that this whole Music Modernization Act was going to be a great thing because it was going to raise the royalty streaming, the price per stream. Like, we're going to get paid more. Artists are going to make more money. But what they didn't understand is that within that act, there was a clause that basically allowed labels and publishing admin companies to claim royalties based off of market share percentage of their catalog if no one claims those royalties within 18 months. So before, you would just collect royalties and then you'd eventually get them after you've realized that you have to like go through this hoop and call these people and threaten these people and then they'll pay you. But now if you don't get them, basically if you don't use them, you lose them. And so let's say out of, let's say there's $1 billion in unclaimed royalties over the past 18 months, Sony has 25% market share of the whole market of their catalog that's generating royalties. If those black box royalties are not distributed, then they go back to the people who maintain those market shares through their catalog. So Sony will get $250 million in royalties off of royalties that they don't own. And so there's actually stealing from the artists. And so you can't even go back and claim them now, because if it's after a certain amount of time, they don't exist anymore. And so that is a very, very, very big problem. And the metadata and data control when it comes to a trustless system and interaction between entities, blockchain will revolutionize the music industry. And that's why it's very important. We are trying to, you know, be the front runner for that. Obviously, there's a lot of people, you know, doing that, but we're definitely trying to help facilitate that transition. And there's a lot of people that don't want to see it, because obviously, you know, it's in their favor as well. So we're trying to definitely like work together in this new paradigm shift of data control. And it's really, really bad in the music industry. So, you know, obviously it was so bad in the baking industry. That's why that bubble popped in back in 2008, you know, because people were essentially lying about how much money they were going to be making and then defaulting on a bunch of loans when it comes to the mortgages, causing a bunch of domino effects to happen. That's why Bitcoin was created, to create that trustless system. And so it's going to start seeping into every different industry. So we won't have to trust other people. It's just going to be written in the contract. But it's very important for the music industry to be able to take this and facilitate a happy, open, communicative, trusting, comfortable environment to move forward.
Wow.
That's such a great deep dive into how the complexities of the music industries work. Because like, I had no idea that it was like this whole big pool of capital that was just sitting there. And then Sony's like, yep, I'll grab that. You know, like that's so fascinating.
It's crazy.
You've blown it up. That's cool. I'd say like my first assessment is that if we look at DeFi, for example, in that situation, in the traditional finance world, I think maybe some people might call it CeFi. We see, you've alluded to it there as well. You mentioned it, where that's another instance where there's a whole bunch of incumbent firms who have been there for a long time. And there's a lot of jargon, there's a lot of confusing systems, outdated systems, and a lot of things that are in place that favor the people who understand how it works and create a very significant asymmetry of knowledge and information for anyone who hasn't been in the industry for a long time. And as you're saying there, that exists in the same way in the music industry. And it's very interesting, and it's ripe for disruption, as you're saying. But it's very complicated, and you kind of need to whittle your way in there, understand how it works to be able to actually make a difference. And so it sounds like you've begun that journey. And so props to you for doing it. Maybe on a simple level, I agree with what you're saying. I've always thought, like, let's take a simple example on, say, you know, Spotify or anything like that. In the end, we are like, we're trusting that Spotify's streaming numbers are correct, or we're trusting that Apple Music's streaming numbers are correct on a particular song and a particular artist. Like, I have no way of verifying that whether or not those are correct. And so even me as the artist, I'm looking at their dashboards. I'm looking at like all of those things. It's all data that they've created. And so is there a world where something like Boomin could be linked onto these platforms, and it's literally verified? It's almost sitting there in the background, and it's verified. It's a third party, or it's a decentralized party that doesn't have a stake in the number of streams necessarily, and it verifies to the world, if you want it, that yes, that number of streams is correct, because it's been sitting there, and for lack of a better word, it's heard that number of streams, as opposed to Spotify is just telling us that number of streams. Is that a concept?
It is, but it's very hard to implement on a
bunch of. Because why would they want that?
Exactly. That's the first thing. Even if they did, then you come to a crossroad of people like farming streams. So
yes,
streams
that's
that
a good concept.
Are people who are listening,
yeah,
but they're not really listening.
Smart.
So does it count as a stream? Like, if a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? Does it make a sound? You know, like who is to say how long someone needs to listen to something for it to count as a stream? Is it a stream? Where is it coming from? You know, there's a bunch of Spotify is definitely going through it as far as like, you know, going through trying to prove that and taking away streams that they've deemed not a stream because they've linked with enough information to come back to say that whatever's coming from these device IDs are false because these device IDs are actually just a bunch of people, a bunch of phones sitting in a room somewhere, you know, pressing play. I've seen viral videos of people in, you know, third world countries with thousands of phones, you know, going through, clicking things, trying to create different, you know, affiliate link marketing generations of revenue streams.
And that's what you're referring to as stream farming there, right?
Yeah, stream farming is a huge thing, and you know, when it comes to Boomin is very important because it's very difficult to fake a stream, to fake a verification, and so there's a bunch of different implementations on the back end, which you know basically are you know taking the device ID, taking like geofenced locations, you know, talking about how you're engaging with the app itself, you know, like. If you're getting in trouble and you need to take, let's say you get a ticket for speeding and you need to take a course and you take that course and it's a 4-hour course, you can't just like press play and walk away. Like they randomly, you know, pop up. Are you still there? It's like you click this or put these numbers in captures, you know, just basically to, you know, get around the fact that you actually need to be doing what you're saying that you're doing, which is a hard thing for Spotify to verify. So with Boomin, the amount of information that that is used, you know, there needs to be an actual person using the device. There are implementations such as all these things like captures and you know, the adding the numbers up and different pictures to make sure that you are a real person. But to do that for every single stream is just an impossibility. It's not something that can actually happen. But if you're able to utilize that in a way where you can attach a certain hash to that and then use the different numbers of hashes related to streams on NFT collections for, let's say, for streaming when it comes to music, then you start reaching a point where you might be able to actually guarantee that. And obviously nothing is guaranteed. So, you know, 99.99%, but, you know, I wouldn't even want to be implemented into any of the platforms only because again, you're basing it off of trusting them and that they're actually going to be doing it correctly. And so, that's something that, you know, we can definitely, you know, revisit once, you know, the network has grown and like it's, you know, very, very big and secure. But, you know, as of right now, I don't see that on the cards.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's such an interesting thing that like there's so many, because you don't really think about how many views are fake or how many YouTube views or how many Instagram likes or anything like that. But then there's huge, there's obviously those huge back rooms where everyone's pressing like on a on a photo
or a YouTube video. As long as, you know, as well as 5,000 other sounds that are happening, but they are listening to it. So, you know, it's like.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So the monopoly on music essentially is what I refer to as the centralization, the Spotify's and your Sony's and everything like that. And they typically don't help much with the struggling artist mentality. We had a guy on the other day who made a song, and he was explaining how he co-wrote a song with another guy, and they basically got 18% of the ownership of that song together. And so basically they're splitting that 18%. Do you think it's, and he was a brand new artist as well. He was only making, you know, he only had a couple of thousand streams so far, and he got this deal, which kind of just stuffed up the rest of his royalty making ability. Do you think it's possible for a creator to have that genuine level of success without the production, the distribution channels, the marketing support of the label? Or do you think that artists can be just as good while also owning a much larger portion of their own music income?
I think that the labels and the machine that they've created is not necessary anymore. I also feel that way about college. I don't necessarily think that college is something that, you know, we need to do like how they used to do back in the day. If you don't go to college, you're not going to get a degree. You're not going to be successful. And then now you have YouTube and the internet. You can learn anything about anything. Unless you want to become like an engineer or a doctor, or attorney, something like that, then obviously school, you know, university is very important. So in the same respect, if you're trying to, you know, be in front of 500 million people every month and you want to not be able to walk out of your house because your face is plastered everywhere, then yes, a label is what you want. But I think, and maybe I'm just talking for myself, but I would say that most and the majority of the artists just want to be able to make a living just doing music. They don't really care about if they're famous or not. And then obviously some people are the complete opposite. They just want to be famous and don't care about the money. So it's like, I think most people just want to make a living. They want to pay their, help their family out, buy a house, you know, just do regular, normal shit. And I think that you don't need a label for that. I think that, you know, especially with Web3, I saw something that I think it was Rack that posted it about the royalties on a drop that he did. So he released the song and then it minted and there was only like 36 editions or something. But the amount of money that he made off of that one drop, not even including the secondary sales, was equivalent to 7.7 million streams on Spotify. So he got, I think it was like in total, like $56,000 for one drop. And you're talking about the comparison of the current way, which is 7.7 million people had to listen to one song. 7.7 million people for them to be able to get the same amount as 36 people. Or I might've been, you know, it was less than like 200 people. It was like 100 and something maybe or something like that. But it was like the amount of people that you need to get, especially with where things are right now in Web3, to just make a living is, it's nothing. You're talking about go out, make one fan a day, every day for 1 month, then do a drop, and you'll make just as much money as if you had 7.7 million people list. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole space is completely different now. So we're talking about not only actually doing that, but more about the education and the awareness that this is now possible. So people, it's like, you know, you can do this, like, oh, that's for the birds. This doesn't, no, like this is happening right now. Oh, this is a scam, or this is just a, you know, during the beginning, or I was seeing some numbers that basically like super fans account for like 50% of the profit revenue for any brand. We're talking about 1% of the fans account for 50% of the, so it's really just about how you handle yourself as far as your mentality. You know, I think mentality is a huge component of just being successful in life, period. And when you are so conditioned to think the way that everyone has always thought, then it's hard to break out of this, you know, constant repetition, and you kind of just feel stuck. And then you might get upset and play the victim role and like, oh, you know, this and that, versus, you know, trying to figure out how to break the system. And it's not breaking the system. You just have to break away from the system and really just focus on making fans and personally every single day, making one fan a day for 1 month. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's very, very easy and people make it hard.
That's really cool. What you're saying with the focusing on the 1% there who are generating majority of the revenue is super smart. It's similar, like I've heard a lot of business commentators who will talk about when you're doing a startup and you've got a bunch of early adopters, your best opportunity is probably just to focus on those guys and the crowd will sort of follow, because there's usually a large portion of the crowd who get their signals and their indicators from those who are like really deep into things. And so what you're saying is so true. And so if you can harness that 1%, make it 2%, you know, increase the revenue from it. That's really what we're talking about here in a lot of these projects that we're talking to. Your specific project, Boomin. Could you tell us, we've talked about things very much from a macro perspective here, which I think is important to provide that context for people who are listening. But for you specifically, we talked about kind of how it works initially at the start, but could you talk us through a little bit more about how that solves the problem? So you're saying, you know, I can access your platform, it's probably going to be an app or something, and I can verify that I'm listening to the music. Now, that seems like that's something that I have to do, and consumers don't like having to do things. So what's the benefit to them? I assume you're going to explain maybe it's the NFT, for example. And if that's the case, so if they're going to do that, what's the benefit just more simply for the artist to jump on? And again, you know, the artist is going to have to go on there, set up the NFT and stuff. What's the value prop for both parties?
Okay, so yeah, basically the value prop for the listener is obviously getting that exclusive content from their favorite creators. So the whole thing is incentivizing engagement and creating a different relationship that's a different dynamic between the creator and their fans. And that's through actual ownership on blockchain through NFTs. That's on the listener side. And then on the creator side, it's really all about owning your data. It's all about owning your own metadata and controlling it and doing whatever you want with it. And, you know, basically revenue is what we're looking for, right? That's like the thing, the end goal for most people. So revenue and how you can control your own data and organize it and utilize it in a way that generates you revenue. And so Boomin basically just gives that ability using different analytics, metrics, and utilities within this giant platform of a toolbox for you to be able to generate engagement through different incentives with your audience, and as well as controlling your own data and really stacking campaigns in different ways, because this is yours, you can do whatever you want with anything. And so now an artist, instead of just telling everybody to go stream their you know, their new song on Spotify so that they can maybe get a check in 6 months that's for 50 cents, now you can say, you can go to Spotify to listen to it, but you're creating an incentive for them to go and listen to it because they're not going to hear the song, and then more so going because they're going to receive something in return that wasn't able to be done before. And so now you're creating a different economy, a different brand marketplace that's essentially your own marketplace to tell your audience that now you can, you know, win, you know, tickets to go see me if you're in this town, if you stream this song, or different gamifications where, you know, you can stream a song a certain amount of time and unlock certain things. So there's a bunch of different companies that are creating like different unlockables and different kind of like play to earn kind of things. But you know, no one that I've seen has it all collectively in one place for, you know, user friendly for both the creator and the listener on both sides.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, that makes so much sense. One thing I thought would be interesting to clarify generally just for our community is I've talked to a few people recently and they're kind of like, don't like, they might not be people who are in this space. They're just general consumers. And they're asking like, but why would I want the NFT? It's not rational. Like, what does it give me? And I'm like, no, but you're thinking about this wrong. You're thinking, because how many people would pay so much money in the traditional economy for an album that has a signature of the artist on it, right? And the answer is a number of people, not every person who listens to that song, but quite a number of people, as you're saying, that 1%.
Right.
And chances are they're willing to pay a lot of money if they love the artist. It doesn't make any sense though, because it's still the same songs on there. There's no necessarily increase in value. It's just all, you know, internal, right? And so that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about specific content, which is probably rare content that defines your involvement and your engagement with the artist. Obviously, yeah, maybe someone else is going to like it more one day. You could on-sell it. There's opportunities for that. But some people are just genuine fans. And that's what we're talking about here. So anyone who wants that clarification, hopefully that does sort of give a bit of clarification. Okay, last question, which I think is really interesting, is the Laboomin crypto car. And so I know we've mentioned it previously before, but it would be interesting to hear you talk about it again. To me, it seems like it's like a tangible, for these people who don't understand how it works, it's a tangible thing. There it is. Tell us your experience with it. Has it been, you know, useful for what you're doing? How's people's reactions to it?
So basically, LeBoomin is a 1994 Chrysler LeBaron. Currently, it's actually being rebuilt, and there's a couple of things going. Oh. So it's gonna be like a fleet of cars, but there's gonna be more. But basically, right now it's a 1994 Chrysler LeBaron that booms really loud. So we named it the LeBaron that booms with LeBoomin. So it has a 30,000 watt sound system. 30 speakers in the car. I took out the back seat of the car and welded a steel diamond plated frame on the bottom. Put hinges from a coffee table. Hinge where it like kind of folds out on top so you can like watch TV and eat dinner. I reversed it, and so now the turntables sit in the back and they fold out onto the trunk. And underneath I have, you know, racks on racks on racks. I have, you know, EQs and noise suppressors, compressors, wireless microphones, the whole works, everything. An 8-channel mixer. And then I have my turntables and mixer on the top. And then there's Lamborghini doors. So the doors go up, and it just like the whole like look of it, it just looks really, really, really crazy.
You get pulled over in about 5 seconds in Australia. The cops would hate you.
I've definitely been pulled over numerous times. I'm banned from Southwich. I'm banned from Brickell.
It's made quite the impact.
We got kicked out of a bunch of different. Yes, I'm the kind of person that will push something until I'm told to stop, or I will be arrested. So I've always been a very big component on. It's more than just of something being good or someone being talented or something sounding really good. Like you're like, oh, there's a huge difference between, wow, this is amazing. Thank you. And holy fuck, this is insane. Oh my God. Like, just come over here. Come over here. Like the difference between those two types of interactions will make or break you. You have people who are one hit wonders and you have people who are legends, and I am a legend. No,
clip that. Done.
No, that's it. I think my mentality make an NFT. No. The way that I think is really the wow factor. It's you being so blown away by what you heard or what you're experiencing that you want to tell the entire world. And so that is what I kind of go off of, that feeling for LeBoomin is like, people don't even know what they're looking at. They're just like, wait. People are speechless. They like have no idea what they're talking about. So, you know, the viral component is insane. Let's say there's a group of 100 people listening to us perform. Out of the 100 people, I would say at least 60 of them have their phones out, you know, just filming, because they're just like, wow, I have never seen anything like this in my entire life, and I have to share it with the world. That's what you want. We want people to want to share it with the world. And cops like Jilly. So she's been like my
saving grace. She drives.
Basically, it's been instrumental on understanding our audience, understanding who is our targeted, pitch to, you know, who is really going to be, you know, caring about what we're doing and who wants the value that we want to provide them. And then on top of that, when it comes down to it, in the most basic natural sense, is it brings everybody together. And I think that Web3 is creating a network that's decentralized, because as a decentralized network, we are all the same and we are all one, which is what we actually are. We are all one. And so what LeBoomin does is it brings everybody together, because the way that I DJ and the way that Jillian performs and the way that we have musicians come in and out, there isn't one specific person or type of person that comes to one of our shows or that would stop and film us. And so like bringing all these people together, not even speaking the same language, because it's not even something that you need to understand. A lot of people listen to K-pop, they don't know how to speak Korean at all. And so it's really what brings you together is the audio, is the universal language of just being touched by a certain frequency. And this physical, in-person, tangible experience that we've then formulated an entire company around is absolutely incredible. I'm so blown away every single time we go out to perform, which is you don't even know what to expect. It's just like a new thing every single time. And so it's going to be really, really awesome when it comes to the app, when the app does drop, going out and performing for people and getting them excited about it and having them download the app and having them, receive and drop NFTs in real life in the middle of the street. It's something that is going to be revolutionary, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, and what do you think is the kind of the timeline on that app? I know you gave us a little preview last time, but when do you think that'll be dropping?
So the beta is probably going to be dropping, I would say, in about a month and a half to 2 months, and then probably the actual like full V1 towards the end of the year. It is already done. We are going through it right now as far as debugging, research and development, making sure all of the technical aspects are good, doing usability tests to make sure that the interface and the UI UX is very simple. I don't want people to know that they're on blockchain. That's one of the biggest things that is huge that I don't really enjoy with other D apps that I've interacted with, is that, it's kind of clunky. It doesn't really look good. It's not smooth. It might be confusing about where something is. It doesn't really look good. And so as of lately, I've been seeing more focus on UI and UX because that the interaction between blockchain and the internet and in real life is all about the UI and the UX. And so that has to be super on point. So we spent a very long amount of time to make sure that that is incredibly simple, engaging, captifying, and very explanatory, self-explanatory. We're super, super excited about the app coming out. I think it's going to be revolutionary for all creators, not just musicians. So we're very, very, very excited.
I was just going to say, I noticed you mentioned that you don't want people to be on, you don't want people to feel as though it's a blockchain Web3 app. And then for that, it's really clunky, but they're like, oh no, but it's cool because it's blockchain. To me, it's kind of like the Nissan Leaf versus like a Tesla, right? Where it's like the Nissan, the Nissan Leaf was like, no, but it's electric. So it's cool. Like you guys all need to get around it. And we're like, no, but it sucks. Like, why would I want to drive it? But then Tesla were like, oh, right. You guys still want performance and a nice interior? There you go. Oh, and it's electric.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the blockchain isn't the selling factor. It's like the foundation.
Which is what people
everything
want.
Else that is the selling factor for sure. Exactly.
Well, we've got Dreidel. He's building really cool things on the blockchain. He's building seamless integration with the modern app world. You're building a really cool car which you can just take around and have little street parties on. Hopefully a fleet of Chrysler LeBarons. You got music verification, proof of sound, bringing that to the market, verifying. It's going to be bigger than Spotify. It's going to be bigger than Sony Music. And it's going to bring the power back to the people. So, Dreidel, is there anything that you want to pump right now?
I would definitely say for everybody listening, definitely go to the website, sign up for the wait list, because it's not going to be, when it is publicly released, the audio wallet, it's not going to be publicly open for everyone to go and interact with it. So you are going to have an invite code, which will be a founding NFT. And so you guys definitely need to sign up to it in order to access it. And, I would just say definitely check us out. We're going to be starting to implement more community and more conversation when it comes to having Twitter spaces and having AMAs regarding the whole thing. So we did put our Twitter on private. There's been some back and forth with, other people and, basically sending robots to the account and a bunch of like issues that are unnecessary. But it is on private right now, but it won't be for long. So definitely check us out on Twitter and then check out our Discord. We're going to be definitely doing a lot more. I know there's going to be a lot of questions coming around everything. So definitely check out the website, go through it all. We're also going to be releasing in a couple of weeks basically help and FAQ section that's going to kind of go in, because the app is now done. So and then we can kind of, you know, screenshot it. How do I do this? Or where do I find that? Or kind of like just going through very, very simple things. So definitely be on the lookout for that. But yeah, just definitely stay in the loop.
Oh, well, definitely the most enthusiastic tech founder we've had so far. And it's always great.
And probably one of the smartest.
That's always great. About,
like, you know, some stuff. Exactly. You know, some stuff.
There's a lot. I think that you have to understand the machine in order to build a machine. So in order to, you know, build a boat engine, you need to take apart a boat engine to see how they work. You know, you can't just be like, I like boats, I'm going to change the industry. You know,
dang it.
A lot of people that I've seen, they're like, I love music, or I have the connections to do it, and I'm going to change it. I'm like, well, I ask them one question, and the answer they give me, I'm like, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. He's going to be in for a very, very rude awakening. So there's a lot of people out there that have companies and more support to them. I support everybody looking and trying to chase their dreams and their passions. But there's going to be a lot of rude awakenings when it comes to the music industry, because there's a lot of things that people don't understand and they don't know about. And there's one thing of understanding it and then going on your journey. But when you're understanding as you're going on your journey, the learning experience can beat you up a little bit. So I would just say for any founders out there, definitely keep your head high. If you have any questions, definitely reach out to me. I'm an open book. You know, to everybody else that are listeners that aren't founders, definitely be very wary about the DAOs that you join. Definitely check for audits and make sure smart contracts are up to par. You know, don't trust anybody. That's it.
On that note.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.